Stardate 96920.18. You are listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod, a special feedback episode of Star Trek Discovery Pod, listener feedback episode. My name is Mike Moody. With me is
Mariah Gossett,
Clyde Haynes,
Grant Davis.
So, listener,
is that how I said it last time?
Grant Davis.
All super serious.
Yeah,
Grant Davis.
That's why I had you go last.
Yeah.
Last time you said your name like that and everybody followed suit.
Yep.
So, listener, in case you are hearing us for the first time, our pod, what we typically do is discuss an episode of Star Trek Discovery in depth, but there are no more episodes of Star Trek Discovery.
What? How do we live?
Wait, it's not canceled.
Oh, okay.
But this shouldn't be your first episode.
It should not. No.
No.
If you're listening to us for the first time, well, I don't want to tell them not to listen.
Well, I mean, you can
just
listen.
Go back.
Yeah. Start at the beginning.
We got some special treats for them. So this might be some people finding out about those special treats and then coming in.
Actually, yeah. What we're going to do today, we set up a voicemail hotline so listeners can call in at the end of season two. Season two of Discovery just wrapped a few days ago. Wrapped. Yeah. Teaser.
You guys are
spoiler.
Terrible.
Yeah, we're no good. But We're gonna play all those listener voicemails, and we're also gonna read some reviews that we've gotten and some listener feedback from Facebook and emails and other places. So we're gonna dive into that in a sec. But before we do that, Grant, can you tell the listeners how they can support this little baby tiny podcast?
Guys, you want to help us? You want to keep this little mission, this space mission afloat? Is that, I don't know what I'm talking saying there. Anyway,
Clyde just rolls his eyes.
If you want to help us out, please go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod. If you've never heard of Patreon, it is a site that allows you, the consumer of our show, to actually help monetarily support us. You can give us whatever you'd like. $1 an episode, $2 an episode. We always say $2 an episode is a great baseline because then you guys also get exclusive access to our Slack channel, which is a private network, a private chat room that we all talk about Trek and discuss theories and spoilers, and we share stuff about our lives, sometimes a little bit too much, Clyde. And it's a great little community, and we would love for you guys to come join us over there. That is patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Give us your money.
And some of our patrons are people who called in today in terms of listener feedback.
So. They actually, yeah, when you guys are on that Slack channel, you guys find out about our little plans and machinations behind the scenes first. A little extra bonus.
Early access. You also get access to some bonus podcasts that we do on Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And if you visit us at StarTrekPod.com, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, other places. You can find links to our Twitter, all of our social media there. And yeah, go back and listen to our back catalog. We have companion episodes about every single episode of Star Trek Discovery. Okay, let's dive into this.
Hot takes!
No, not that.
Oh, are we not doing hot takes?
Hot take on what, Grant?
I guess we could do like a real good cold take. Now that we've settled in on this episode, and like it's been out for a while.
Oh, you mean the finale?
The finale.
You want to talk about the finale again?
Or a cold take on the season.
Cold take on the season. I thought we were just going to listen to the voicemails. But this is a looser episode, so we can do what we want to do. It's all good.
I don't mean to be monkeying any wrenches or whatnot.
I did watch the finale 3 more times.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
It was kind of an accident because I got home from recording and then my spouse was watching it, but then he fell asleep. But I was like, well, it's on. I'm just going to keep watching it.
You keep watching. You got to keep doing it.
I just kept watching. And then we rewatched it again the next day because he was like, oh, well, I fell asleep. So now I don't know what happened.
How many times have you watched it?
I've only seen it one more time.
Mm. So twice.
Yeah, but that happens. That happens in my household all the time. Usually, though, it's not a show as cool as Star Trek, and it's something that I'm only marginally interested in. So, but
Mike, did you rewatch it?
No.
No? I didn't actually even watch it the first time.
Oh, really?
I just read the synopsis on Wikipedia.
You did a pretty good job in the pod.
Ooh, I'm a big faker.
I mean, you quoted a whole bunch of stuff. It's pretty good. No, I'm going to do a complete season rewatch in the next, like, couple weeks. So I'm saving it for that.
Ah, sweet. Okay.
Yeah.
Overall, I still feel great about it. I thought it was a really fun season of Trek, and I like with the darker tone that they established in the first one. This seemed a lot more optimistic. You got a much better sense of the whole team and the expanded universe. You know, for me, not being as familiar with it, I thought that it was a good thing for a newbie, as well as probably for you guys, because you guys seem pretty excited about some of the larger mythos and Trek lore that they were exploring.
Well, I think it's a bit interesting because this season was so different from the first, right? The first, you had this one kind of thing that was overarching everything. And this one, it felt more episodic. There was a kind of a theme, but it just felt a little bit more like the Trek that we're used to. And of course, they closed some gaps for me. They kind of tied it all together. You know, I was always asking for some character development. We didn't quite get it, but we got a little bit more. And it just makes me that more excited about next season.
You mean like character development of like the
random people sitting around the front of the
more expanded cast. Yeah, okay.
I enjoyed the lighter tone this season too, even though there was some dark aspects to it. It wasn't as dark as the first season or as serialized as the first season, although we did have an ongoing serial arc. We did have a few standalone adventures, and I like that this season leaned into the adventure aspect a lot more than the previous season and a lot more than a lot of Star Trek has in a while. I really appreciated that. And of course, you know, the additions of Handsome Mount and Ethan Peck was great.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget Janet Reno.
Janet Reno. Yeah. Well, I mean,
Janet Reno. Different show with Janet Reno.
Well, her name is inspired by Janet Reno, according to the producers.
Ah, perfect. Oh,
interesting. Yeah, I think this season definitely did more exploration around like the human condition, which is classic Trek. You know, we had the reliable captain, also more classic. And I think they're going to continue to really pull some of the themes and ideas from TOS even into the next season. Because you know me, I read a bunch of interviews before we came in here, just in case.
Okay, that's going to come in handy with some of our listener voicemails here. Well,
I would also add that the one thing I think we got a little bit more this season than in any Trek before is a cinematic feel. Right. Yeah. Like there was so much that you looked over and said, well, this really could have been a 1 hour movie. And I don't think you had a whole lot of that. I think we were expecting more of it in the first season. And I think if you look at any other Trek series, you don't have it like that. The big productions, the sets, even the way some of the writing, it's much more of a cinematic feel.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll dive into the listener voicemails. And we're back. Okay, should we just jump into some of these calls?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Or okay. As you would say, hit it.
Hit it. Call number one.
Hi, Discovery Pod crew. This is Andrew, a.k.a. Smart Watermelon. I just watched the season finale again, and I have many questions. But to keep things short, I wanted to talk briefly about Admiral Cornwell's sacrifice. I felt it was completely unnecessary. You're on a starship which has, among other things, a transporter system that works point to point, that's been shown to work on the Enterprise, on earlier ships. It even works on the Enterprise later in the original series. It's been shown that you can transport point to point. You don't need to drop your shields, even if for whatever technobabble reason they couldn't transport the entire torpedo, they could have beamed out a portion of it, which would make it inert and not able to detonate. And let's say, okay, transporters are down, the technobabble generators are not working great. Well, we have these cute little maintenance bots that we've never seen before, but they're on the Enterprise. Pike knows about them. He even deployed them to work on the ship next to the torpedo. Why not send one of the maintenance bots in there to pull the lever instead of the Admiral, whom Starfleet has invested the equivalent of millions of whatever Federation credits in training and in her career? Use one of the maintenance bots to pull the lever. Anyway, I was unhappy with that aspect. I felt her sacrifice was completely unnecessary. And overall, I enjoyed the show, obviously. I love listening to you guys recap it the day after. It makes my commute a lot better. Thanks a lot. See you next season. Live long and prosper.
All right. That was Andrew calling in. Andrew is also a $2 patron, so we get to talk to him on the Slack under his pseudonym, like you said there, Smart Watermelon. So thank you, Andrew, for calling in. And yeah, he's talking about, you know, I am going to miss Jane Brooke, Admiral Cornwell.
Really? I mean, she only showed up like in every like five episodes.
I loved, she had such a presence about her. And then later on, she was becoming kind of the counselor on the ship.
We lost a therapist.
Yeah,
so
we
important.
Lost a therapist. Yeah. But I think, you know, I'm going to try and say this without like being offensive, but I think Andrew's question of like, Andrew, you're confusing drama with reality.
Practicality.
It's like we need somebody to die in this episode. We need it to be dramatic. We need it not to be somebody who's going to be in season three. It's going to be Admiral Cornwell, even though I wish we would keep her around and add her to the cast.
So on my third watch of the finale, I agreed with him in some aspect where I was like, y'all, you could literally tie a string around this lever, walk through to the other side, pull it, and then you were done. Like the most low-tech version of this. Like my spouse and I just kept being like, I don't think she had to die.
But, of course she didn't have to die. Right, but it's the future. They have so many different things to do.
But they needed a sacrifice.
We need sacrifice. We need stakes. At that point, we're getting towards the end of the episode, and it's the stakes are ramping up. We're losing people now. Shit's really hitting the fan. We need to feel those stakes. So that's why she died.
Well, Mike, you said this in the last pod, and I agree with this. The importance of that moment was her telling Pike, who also volunteered to sacrifice himself, no, right? No, you can't. And I think what we got out of that was that he really represents the future of the Federation.
Right.
The way he leads, the way he interacts with his crew, just his very vision for what the Federation stands for. I think that's what we were getting at. I think there's a half dozen other ways that could have been conveyed to us without killing her. But I look and go, half the time we didn't know where she was. She'd just like pop up from another room.
Yeah.
Right. And so it also felt like, by and large, when you look at the macro picture, they weren't quite sure what they were doing with her. And, you know, maybe she had other stuff to do. But I look and go, why not send a red shirt in there to do it? Like, you are the admiral.
If they're not existing in this timeline anymore, sure, she could have lived. Obviously, they had other purposes. They want to hit a dramatic note, and they could have done a better job of making a scenario that wasn't so easily
that we could poke holes so easily through.
Yeah. And yeah. Andrew
Boy Scout our ways out of.
Andrew is completely correct. Like, there's a billion ways. That was a problem scene. So, yeah, that is just one of those, you know, we watch so much TV, all of us. Mm-hmm. We were familiar with when you just kind of have to kind of go with whatever the plot is because they are just trying to make you feel something for a character. And, yeah.
Just being a low rent TV critic for so many years, I'm just so forgiving of this stuff now because I see it so often. And the bar for me is, did they make the thematic or dramatic point elegantly, right? And if they did, then I can hand wave that stuff. But here it wasn't very elegant at all.
Well let me ask you this, Mike. So we've had another one of these sacrifices, right? So if you think about Arium. So if you compare Arium's sacrifice to Cornwell's sacrifice, was one done superiorly, like better?
Yeah, Arium's was way better.
So, but did you feel something with that one?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So I just want to make sure that that it really was a scenario and not an ability thing, right? Like we've seen them do this in a way. Right. That was a little bit better.
Everything in that finale was, I mean, pedal to the metal, so rushed. To have something like that happen, it felt weird. And yeah, we could definitely poke a lot of holes in it.
It also wasn't really clear like what the whole scenario was for me when I watched it. I'm like, so you have this torpedo in there that is going to blow a hole three decks down, but somehow you guys are going to be able to trigger it with the blast door closed, the window there closed so Pike can watch it, and you're going to be okay with like a half trigger? I don't even know what was going on.
It was totally inelegant.
It just seemed a little bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea was, I'm sure this was a great idea in the writer's room. She represents kind of the old guard, and Pike represents the future where we want to get to, where Starfleet will get to. And so they wanted to really give us that, not just thematically, but visually, and having her die in front of his eyes, sacrificing herself for him, and him being the one to stay alive and lead the crew and lead everybody into the future. I get that, but it was just clumsy the way it was executed.
A passing of the torch. Yeah. You must go forth and become a melty pile of jello in a wheelchair.
Right.
Whatever. I don't know what that was. I don't know what I saw in that one thing, but he looked like melty ice cream.
Yes, unfortunately.
You're not far off. You're not far off, man.
I'm gonna miss Jane Lynch.
Nope, you're not, because she was not in the show.
What's her name?
Not Jane Lynch.
For like two seasons, I've been calling her Jane Lynch. No. Jane Brooke.
You just called her the right name. Yeah, Jane Brooke. Brooke.
Jane Brooke. Brooke. I haven't seen Jane Lynch in anything either. I miss her too, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, now that...
She's in, now I just want to go home and watch Best in Show.
She's in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, that's right. But she looks different in that.
Oh, yes, she does.
Yeah, all right. All right, next call.
So, this is Karen. Hello, hello. I am going to use this to talk about what I would pitch if I were the writers for season 3, because the data has integrated itself with the ship, and we've already had Michael's discovery arc. She'll continue to grow, but, you know, her main discovery is done. Season 3 could be about the ship discovery being almost your data-like character, where it is learning to become sentient, as we know it eventually does because of Calypso. So then you'd have this character of the ship plus the crew, and maybe the crew realizing, you know, they can't undo it, so they're going to have to work with it. And what about teaching the ship the Federation ways and about humanity, and integrating all of that story into whatever adventures they have? I think that would be really fun and different and exciting, maybe crazy, I don't know. But, you know, the ships have always been a character in the show through the series. Why not make the ship actually a character, especially since we've thrown them so far into the future? They're not coming back, most likely, in any way. The ship cannot come back at all. So it would be fitting to work in with Calypso, which I always thought was a beautiful short trek. And what do you think about that as a projection of what's going to go forward in season 3? Hope you find that an interesting thing to discuss. Bye.
Thank you, Karen. That was Karen, who's also one of our Patreons on Slack. Karen also runs our Twitter feed.
She's awesome.
She's the best.
She does such a good job.
We love you, Karen.
Follow us on Twitter at Star Trek Pod and hang out with Karen.
Bringing up baby Discovery. What do you think of that?
I did like the aspect of Zora and Calypso. I thought just in that 10-15 minute episode, I really got attached to that character, and I wouldn't mind seeing us, you know, having the show give us a proto version of Zora in season 3, you know?
Am I getting this confused, but didn't we have something in season 1 where there was a personification of the ship in the, like, mycelium network or something like that?
I don't remember. No.
Okay.
No. I don't think so. I don't think the ship itself, there was the mycelial network which had a personification.
Yeah.
And that girl Maya or whatever her name was.
No, I was thinking something else. Okay. I think this will be interesting. I don't know how far I want to go with, like, bringing up baby as a ship.
Oh, come on.
I mean,
what about when the ship starts going through puberty? It's going to be so funny.
I mean, that would be my question, right? Do you get to this point where the ship decides to fire a torpedo on something and you go, no, that's not how we do it? That seems a little bit dangerous.
Feels like Vision and Ultron in the Age of Ultron thing.
Something like that.
You created this robot thing and it takes over and has its own perspective of like what's for the better good of humanity and or the galaxy and starts making these executive decisions. That could be kind of freaky.
I think we're going to need our crew bumping up against some kind of entity or some kind of force that doesn't know the values of the Federation and what we as fans hold dear about Star Trek.
Ferengi.
Well, but I don't know. I mean, it might make sense for the AI of the ship to be that they can teach them the values of Star Trek and Starfleet. I don't know if I want to see that. I don't know. What do you think, Mariah?
I don't know. I think they're going to probably dig more into the fact that they're going to be in a future where the Federation does not exist. And how do you interact with populations that have never, you know, they don't know what the Federation is at all, which is, you know, I think Karen's idea is interesting. But I think as like a TOS fan, I'm ready for just like, let's explore some planets. We're going to find out what aliens there are 900 some odd years in the future, which is going to be really rad. So yeah, that's where I think they're probably going.
If we do have a bringing up baby ship situation, that probably means in season 3 we're going to spend a lot more time on the ship and less time exploring planets. Do we want that?
No.
Right.
Not me neither. Personally.
And again, I am hoping that we get to in season 3 is that there's some great character development. Right, particularly with the cast, and I felt like we finally shrunk the cast a little bit. Though I thought we were going to shrink it a lot until like everybody.
Apparently got 50 doctors yeah. going with us.
So I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And like, oh, it's the same thing. So, but I'm hoping that we do get some stories. I don't know that I need a whole episode on Saru's upbringing again, but.
You do. Don't be like that.
But something where we talk about like, you know, who's going to be the captain in the future and they discuss the traits of everyone mm-hmm. and, you know, things like that. Like, I'm interested in that. Like, I want to see that.
I wouldn't mind necessarily the ship showing a little bit of like AI awareness or maybe an integration with the sphere, whatever the collective consciousness of that sphere is
that's integrated
with it and maybe eventually evolves into Zora. I think that's actually a pretty fascinating element that could be kind of threaded through the rest of the narrative while still having plenty of room for them to explore other planets. I'm skeptical, though, that they're going to want to stay 950 years in the future for too long.
Yeah.
With this group of talented people, I would imagine they can hack the mycelial network, figure out how they were able to time travel that earlier. And maybe it's more of like a sliders type situation or quantum leap thing where they're able to kind of jump to different timelines. And now that they know that they are on a ship that has this capabilities, they are scared of going back to their own main timeline with a weapon of that degree of power. So instead, they're just kind of using it to adjust elements that they find problematic in the past.
Great. I don't understand something. You've seen Quantum Leap and Sliders, mm-hmm. but you've never watched Star Trek.
No, that's nerdy shit.
There is a stigma on Star Trek. We know this. Like, if you watch that shit, you're a real nerd.
No, I would say that people who can talk and discuss episodes of Sliders are the true nerds.
I did read an interesting interview with Michelle Paradise kind of talking about where they're heading in season 3. And the interviewer was essentially being like, well, you know, they left a timeline where time travel was not as accessible, but they're jumping into a future where time travel does eventually become more accessible because in other Star Treks, they time travel all the time. Yeah. Also, it's funny that Burnham disappeared into a wormhole and so does Spock eventually. And are they going to, because they're in the future, are they going to be able to like essentially see what happened to everybody? Because, like, how are they going to get that history? Do they know how like Kirk and Spock and do they know what happens to Pike? You know, I think it's going to be interesting.
That's the first thing I would do.
Right? But. Like, get on the in the article they called it Space Google. Like, get on Space Google and see what happens.
There's got to be like a pike,
intergalactic Wi-Fi network that they can just like, what's the password, guys?
There's got to be something. But the other thing with the whole like ship as a as a being is like, there's another 1,000 years before we get to Calypso, because Calypso is in the 33rd century, and we're jumping to the 32nd century.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, another 100? No, 100 years? 1,000 years?
100 years. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Century.
I think what's interesting is we always know that Star Trek reflects things that are going on. So I'm curious, when we think about this whole AI culture that we're in today, how that might be kind of reflected in the show, right? What people think about the oncoming changes to our world and society because of AI. And when I think about Star Trek, what I would hope is that the best possible future that we can see for ourselves today would be depicted on screen.
That'd be interesting.
Mariah, you read the Three Body Problem books, right? I was talking to you about this before. No?
I have not read those books.
No.
Oh. I've just started reading those.
Okay. Yeah, you talked to Clyde.
Well, I guess I was talking to you, Clyde, maybe a little, but they part of that book eventually dabbles in the fourth dimension as well. And I wonder if, you know, this is just one of those things, like, as we advance into the future, I think there's this inevitability of us leveling up in our dimensions, and no longer like the third dimension becoming a little bit more desolate as people kind of transition our minds and bodies into a fourth dimensional concept of reality.
I don't think I've had enough coffee for this yet.
Like, what if they go to the...
Wait, let me read 4 Stephen Hawking books and I'll be right back.
Yeah. They go 950 years into the future. Like, what if there's no one there? Because they're like in another whole plane. Like,
they're gonna hit up against some kind of wall.
Ascension when they get there. Is basically what you're talking about. Hey, like, if you think about Stargate. I know. Hey.
Are you guys high-fiving Stargate? About...
We are, yes.
Wait, Sliders is too dorky?
Yes. Yes.
Sliders is dorkier than Stargate, man.
Sliders absolutely is dorky.
Just going through portals, and it's quantum leap with a portal instead of in time.
Does it matter? The truth is, I've seen them all. So
Stargate's got Momoa, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, Stargate's got Teal'c. You said Momoa.
Yeah, Atlantis. In Atlantis.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Stargate Atlantis has Momoa, which, you know, significantly ups the cool factor.
Hell yeah.
Man, do you know how I'm like having this weird epiphany right now that my parents were just like secret nerds, because we had all the Stargate on DVD and
secret nerds.
Yeah, there's nothing secret about my mother and her nerdiness. There's none.
It was, but like, you don't realize it till you're like, man, my parents were nerds.
Yeah.
But they're great nerds, so it's okay.
Get them on the pod.
They probably know more than I do. They're ready.
Okay.
Next. Oh, thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
That was great.
Yeah. I'm going to read a quick review that we have on Apple Podcasts. I may have read this one before, but maybe not. But it's one I love, and it's from Jackie Landry. She says, "It's just that good. This podcast got me through some really tough pain levels while in the hospital for neck surgery in January, and then another one in February. These guys are hilarious. They know their stuff. Most days... they are hilarious, they know their stuff, and they are totally entertaining. Disco wouldn't be the same without being viewed through the lens of this amazing podcast. 5 stars.
I hope your neck is better.
Yeah.
The irony here is that I'm often called a pain in the neck by a lot of people.
I was going to say, did Grant start this pain?
The rest of you guys are the balm.
Jackie, this means a lot to me. I mean, when I read this a few months ago, I kind of teared up, and this kind of feedback, I'm a big softie, but I think this is a really special comment and a really special review, and we truly hope you're getting better and getting the medical attention you need, and we're just happy to be a tiny part of making you feel better through your tough time. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I want to echo that, Mike. I think when we started this out, we wanted to get together and talk about Trek and be a part of everyone else's viewing experience. But what I find is that if we can make – you know, your experience going through something that's that painful, or your commute a little bit better, like that's really pretty cool. And so thank you for sharing that with us.
Okay, we have a very special voicemail now. We have a few more to play. They're all very special, but this one
might be noteworthy.
It's a little noteworthy, and I was really surprised to get it. So let's listen.
Hello, everybody who brings the podcast to life. This is Anthony Rapp, a.k.a. Lieutenant Commander Paul Stamets, and I've listened to every episode, and I just wanted to sincerely thank you for your thoughtful and very entertaining commentary and feedback and response. It really means a lot to me personally, and I know it means a lot to everyone involved to know that there are people like you guys who really take to heart what we're trying to do with the show. And I have a blast listening to it every week. I come from theater where, you know, I get to have a more immediate sense of audience response because, you know, they're like literally in the room with me when I'm performing on stage. So when I do film and television, it's a little hard to get as powerful a sense of how the work is landing with people. So things like your podcast really do make a difference. And it's a ton of fun that you take it seriously, but you also bring a lot of humor to your discussions. And I thank you personally for the very kind words you've said about my work and my character and my work with Wilson, and all of that's very meaningful. And keep it up, and thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
All right. A call from Anthony Rapp, Lieutenant Stamets himself. Thank you for calling in. I know, you know, Anthony has been a huge supporter of us online, you know, reaching out to us on Twitter, sometimes retweeting episodes.
What a liar. He's never listened to this show. What?
And we repay him by doubting his sincerity.
All your letters work, Clyde.
Yeah. That was just great. That was just great to be recognized. And, you know, just awesome. Just organically from the beginning of this podcast, we, you know, we have our favorites on the show. But I think most of us have singled out Anthony Rapp as being one of our favorites on the show. Stamets being one of the most interesting characters, most dynamic characters, somebody we really want to see butt heads with everyone else on screen. And he's always a joy to watch. And just to hear the actor who brings that character to life reach out to us and say thank you for what you're doing. Just feels great.
I also think that's really fascinating when he was talking about the idea of a theater performer mm-hmm. having that direct interaction and engagement with an audience, and that weird distance that you have when you work on something like weeks to months in advance of its release, and you're not sure of how it's going to actually perform, and just kind of that anxiety, that separation. I mean, for me, I would just be like, yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, we make a direct point of not only watching this show to talk about it, but watching it right away and getting our fresh perspective on it, right. Which, you know, is skewed a little because then we can't really like dive into a lot of the details and Easter eggs and all that I'm sure other podcasts are able to really go into. But I like that we're able to give that immediate, just like quick response.
That instant feedback.
Yeah.
He recently was on Cameron Esposito's podcast, Query, which is another great,
really good.
Great podcast. Cameron does excellent interviews. And he talked about just how like wonderful like Star Trek fans are and how supportive they are of like his and Wilson Cruz's like relationship on the screen and how important that like kind of depiction is in the work that they're doing, and how, you know, kind of diving into something that has such a huge fan base is a little intimidating at first, but it's been such a wonderful experience. And so if you haven't listened to that interview, it's really good. I highly recommend it.
That's great too, because I think there's certainly the stigma about the Star Trek audience being like very territorial,
rigid,
yeah. and like a little bit too intense about their fandom, that they kind of lose perspective. That was my understanding before doing this podcast. I'm like, Trekkies are intense, and I haven't really witnessed that aspect so much as like it's just people who love great storytelling, and they love this idealism of it, and they like the inclusiveness that like and the fun tech and discussion of that, like they're just enthusiasts.
And I think, you know, even though, and if you follow Anthony on Twitter, he does tend to point out some of the hate that he gets just for being who he is and playing an LGBTQ character on a big sci-fi show. But he does that to let us know that, yes, this still happens, but I persist. You know, he has his reasons for doing that. But he also very much highlights all the fans who are so positive about him and his character. And I think for decades, Star Trek fans were just really wanting a real representation of an LGBTQ character or lifestyle on the show. And finally, we have a really great, honest one. And he's part of that.
I've got to say, I'm blown away. Like, I'm literally almost speechless, which is why I haven't really said anything. I think to have someone who's part of artwork that we love and also are somewhat critical of on a week-by-week basis, yeah, to reach out to us and say thank you, I mean, really is special. Because, you know, and I want to say that even though we may be a little bit nitpicky, and critical, I think I can speak for everyone here that we do appreciate and honor the work, the actual work that is being done and how hard it is to create something. And so to have someone say, I recognize what you guys do and I appreciate it because, Grant, to your point, you're giving back you're giving me something that I can't normally get. I feel honored and privileged to be able to be a part of the process.
Thank you, Anthony. All right, next call. This is also a really important one.
Hey, it's Neil in Toronto. I just want to say that yum yum line made me cringe.
Short Neil. And sweet, Neil.
Thanks,
thank you.
Neil.
Thank you. Thanks, Neil. Thank you for the laugh.
Homeboy got in the phone, called the number just to let us know I'm not here for the yum yums.
Oh. Don't yuck my yum.
Oh my gosh. I there were, you know, mixed reactions to, of course, he's talking about Nan's line when Nan and Giorgio are pursuing
Leland
on the season finale of Discovery. But I love that. I was like, fuck, she's horny for some violence. Let's do it.
Maybe he just doesn't know that toppling the patriarchy tastes delicious.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he knows that.
Oh, that yum yum line is so ridiculous. It was so ridiculous. I stopped and I went, what the hell did they just
I loved it.
I mean, I thought it was weird, but in a good way, right? Like, I say what you want to say. Right. Mm. If that's your thing, yum yum, then okay. I mean, it's not slang I'm a pick up. Like, I'm not gonna be hanging out.
You don't use that around the house all the time.
I don't. I'm not. You know,
Clyde says this, and I put away the yum yum shirt I got him as a gift. Thanks a lot, Clyde.
But I think what I was looking at was Nan had to respond in a way that was authentic to the time period and novel and unique. And yum yum was it. And like,
come on, what are you doing right
I'm
now?
I'm serious.
Why are you trying to go on this like justification talk?
I mean, it's yum yum.
I'm into the yum yum.
They just wanted
to say I was
man.
Into it. I'm just saying, I'm trying to say, hey,
if you guys read thing, Clyde's fanfic,
she said yum yum all the time.
She actually has this great backstory for why she said yum yum at that precise moment. Tragedy with her parents, and it's this whole thing.
Hideclainsfucks.com. To read all the fanfic. FUX.
.tumblr.com. Oh no, Tumblr went down.
Oh yeah, Tumblr would not post that. All right. Yum yum. Next call.
Hi there. It's Chili Bo calling from Canada. First of all, love the podcast. Absolutely hilarious and very insightful as well. Just a quick question with regards to Christopher Pike. So he found out his fate. He knows what's going to happen to him, can't change it or anything like that. So does that mean that he can pretty much do whatever he wants? Like, can he fly into a sun and know that he's not going to be killed? And, you know, how does that make a person feel? I mean, how is Pike going around in this universe knowing that he can do whatever he wants? And as long as it happens before this Starfleet training accident, he's golden. Just want your thoughts on that. Love the show. Take care. Bye.
All right. So this call is asking us about Pike. He saw his future. He locked his future into place with a time crystal and it fits in the canon. We know what happens to him in the original series. He ends up in a bleep bloop chair, and he ends up on Talos IV.
Because a bleep bloop chair?
Bleep bloop.
Okay. I thought that was a technical term, but nope, okay.
No. That's...
I'm good.
Technical term. No.
You might as well set a yum-yum chair, but whatever.
Yum-yum. And he ends up on Talos IV because he is incapacitated. And yeah, so now that he knows his future and there's nothing that can stop it.
I don't think that's true.
Okay. Yeah, probably I don't think not. So either.
Okay, we saw that when Burnham touched the time crystal, she saw a very specific future where everyone dies on the ship, including all of her friends. That obviously did not come to pass. So what the time crystal shows you is a very, very highly potential outcome. Depending upon like your decisions that you choose to make, I think.
But I thought it was because he pulled the time crystal out.
He pulled it out from where it originated from, where it grew from. So if you do that, then your future's locked. That was what was. Yeah.
I don't know.
Is it?
Here's what I think. I think if he was flying a shuttle towards the sun because he got real cocky, the shuttle would just like turn off and be like, "Nah, dog, sorry."
Yeah.
Look, I think
it's like
that
anti-Final Destination.
I think anything can happen because if CBS is really smart, they're gonna have a Pike spinoff show.
Well, there's the comic book is gonna come out.
No, they need a show.
They'll at least do a short trek with this Enterprise crew with Pike and Spock, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, they're gonna do more short treks. They built the set.
They built a set.
That's what I'm thinking. They built the set. But
you can repurpose a set, y'all.
Yeah, but here's the deal. You have this set. And tell me, okay, there are four of us sitting at the table. Would any of you not watch a Pike show?
I watched the crap out of that show.
Yes. Exactly.
No.
I think that's the thing. I think what you've hit on is there's a moment where you may not have planned it. You might have said, all right, we're going to have this and then we're going to end it. But where you are right now, you put out a Pike show and it is probably the most watch thing you have. And if you're really trying to build up CBS All Access, that's the ticket. I'm not talking about a Section 31 show that currently looks like it's without Giorgio, right? Or even the Picard show. This Pike show, you've got a set, you've got a crew, they're established. That's a gold mine.
Yeah, I agree.
Go for it.
But then you have to deal with canon all the time.
The money-making cash cow that thing would be, it's worth it.
Not necessarily. I mean, they could go off and do their own adventures. And there is a 10 or 11-year period in which Spock and Pike work together on the Enterprise before TOS begins, really.
Would you guys be interested in, like, a Mirrorverse one, though? No. Like, what if it was a different version of that Pike?
Nope. No.
I would not want that. I would watch it, sure.
Okay. Yeah. I just didn't know if it was the Anson Mount effect or is how he shaped that very particular aspect of that character.
I want to follow this character, this version of
and
this
that
character.
Crew.
Yeah.
I want to know more about that character and that crew.
That Darth Maul lady.
And the shiny ship. I like the shiny ship.
Well, I think, though, going back to the question a little bit, the idea of Pike, at least to me, is he is the type of person who is going to embrace the inevitability of that. I don't think he's going to try and buck the system. I think he's going to accept that that's his fate, and he's going to continue to be the pure idealistic person that he is rather than being a little bit more self-centered and trying to adjust. If he said, this be my fate or whatever, so be it. And so he accepted the time crystal and he's not going to deviate from who he is, which is why it's going to come to pass. Mm-hmm. Burnham, and maybe even more accurately, Jet Reno, saw that same vision of that shit and were like, nope, not going to happen. We're going to do something else about this. And I'm wondering if Reno is a little bit more instrumental in changing the fate of that than Burnham. Because she would see that and go, we can engineer our way around this.
Right.
We're going to do something else crazy.
Right. All right. Next call.
Hi, this is Kyle Volte up in Sudbury, Ontario. Just wanted to say I really enjoyed the second season of Discovery a lot more than the first. The show still vexes me a little, but it's really a lot tighter this season. I am, however, a little concerned that I've really enjoyed Captain Pike, and he's going to be leaving us at the end of the season. So I guess we'll have to see what they do for season 3. Anyway, thanks for the podcast. You have yourselves a great day. Bye.
What was the question?
Yeah.
It was just a comment saying that there are some concerns, but like the pod.
Right? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just thank you, Kyle, for calling in. Kyle listens to the My Mr. Robot podcast, TV Dudes as well, and is a big supporter online and a great listener. Thank you, Kyle, for calling in and listening to the pod and supporting us. Yeah. I mean, season two did vex me here and there, like it did Kyle, but I like we said earlier, I enjoyed the lighter tone to it, and I thought it was a lot more fun this season.
Also, we have so many Canadian listeners, just so y'all know. I'm also of the Canadian persuasion.
I knew it!
We apparently are hot in Canada.
I'm from Vancouver, though, not Ontario.
I wonder what that's about.
Oh, no.
Did you say it wrong?
About?
A boot.
I wonder what that's about.
I'm so sorry, y'all.
Let's just yell Canada references in her face. You can't do that on television.
Now I know that's a Canadian show.
Okay. Nickelodeon.
It's all about student bodies.
I have a quick Facebook comment from Jason Clemens. He says, I'm loving this podcast. Great work, everyone. I cannot wait for the next time. Yay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jason.
Yeah. Right.
Which makes me want to bring up.
Yeah.
What do we got? What do we got in the post-season or in-between seasons thing? Do we have anything planned? Anything lined up?
I want to do something.
Yeah. I think what we should do is kind of get feedback from you, the listeners.
Yeah.
In particular, you patrons. but you know, yeah. Anyone, like, you know, is there anything in particular you guys would like us to tackle? Because I think it could be fun to pop in here maybe a couple times in the off season just to talk about some of the movies or talk about the greatest theme song from any of the shows, including Enterprise.
Don't do it.
It's been a long time. All right, I'll cut it short. Was that whole setup just for that?
Yes, I just wanted you to sing some Enterprise. Yeah.
Grant's like, I don't care what they want us to do for the off season.
Look, I would be interested if, you know, is there a movie coming out this summer?
No.
I'm hoping that there'll be short tracks.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, we'll definitely jump on for the short tracks.
Yeah.
Or maybe previews for some of these other shows or projects or something, casting news.
So speaking of those other shows, I'm curious. Do we know, was Giorgio confirmed as a character in the Section 31?
Yeah.
How is that going to work?
Here's what I've been seeing, though, is they keep just referring to it as
the Giorgio show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not saying specific. They've been talking about the Section 31 show, and then they also talk about the Giorgio show. But I have yet to see someone from the show talking about them as the same show.
That's true.
So I'm wondering if she's getting like a how she came to power show in the Mirrorverse. Mm. Or the other thing was, as I was talking about, there is more possibilities of time travel technology in the future. So she just figures out how to jump. She's like, I'm out of here, y'all.
So let me ask that question then. Are we interested in a Giorgio prequel Mirrorverse show?
Sure.
It could be.
I mean, if it gives me more Killy, then I'm for it.
Right?
Yeah, it could be fun.
I wonder if Sonia San is going to be part of the cast of the third season.
I hope so.
Like, they're going to just, like, swing by the planet and be like, get on. Hop aboard.
Your Uber is here.
We got some missions to solve.
Do you guys want to...
I don't think that's the term.
Do you guys... We got some space to trek. Do you guys want to talk about the Picard show when it comes on? Are we excited about that?
Do we have a date for that yet?
It just started production.
Yeah, okay. At the end of this year sometime, probably like October, December.
Is that Charles Xavier guy playing that? I don't know about that movie.
You mad. Greatest captain in Star Trek history, and you're like that X-Men dude.
Well, let's just leave it to the listeners. Guys, tell us what you want during the off-season, and if you want a companion show for the Picard show, let us know, and maybe we can work it out. We'll see.
Cool.
Are we going to do the, like, telling each other what cast members we thought they were?
Yeah, but we have one more voicemail.
Oh, okay. As Grant suggested.
One.
Right.
One more voicemail, and here it is.
Hi, this is Angela from Minneapolis. I love what you guys do, and I spent too much time on the last call, so I will shorten it up this time. I want to say one thing. No, three things. I'll cut it down. The first is that I love Tilly, who Tilly has become. I was starting to be worried that she was going to be just a Mary Jane figure because she was getting cut off and didn't have a lot of airtime. But now I really love her role in this episode and that line where she said, "Someone owes me a beer." I think she's really coming into her own, and I really love her. Number two, I think Culver was in Stamets' head. I don't think anybody actually saw him. He didn't show up until after Tilly left Stamets. So I think Stamets went into a coma on his own, but Culver was in his head helping him through it. And three, this is for Grant, the Vulcan hand thing usually doesn't touch like Burnham and Spock did in this last episode. The reason why, normally they just hold it up in greeting, like waving or something. But the reason why they did it in this episode was because it was reminiscent to when they were kids and Burnham couldn't do the Vulcan symbol with her fingers until Spock was teaching her by holding hands. Okay, that's it. Love you guys. And it's fun to chat with you on the Spock channel.
Take that, Grant.
Oh! Okay, I like that. Though. It's a little, it was them trying to do like a little Vulcan thing as well as like a human high five. I think that's just
kind of
mixing the two.
Yeah. Thank you, Angela, for that call. She had a three-part question.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, the first thing wasn't a question. It was just some props for Tilly. Yay, Tilly.
I love Tilly. I think we're going to get lots of Tilly and keep it coming.
Yeah, Tilly is a much-needed dose of comedic levity to this show.
Again, I think the reason why we didn't see a whole lot of Tilly this season is just because there's a lot to get to, right? We've got a lot of characters that you're trying to make space for in parts of the story. But I think Tilly, you know, we say this about some of the main characters. There are characters that really add to the story. And I think Tilly's one of those. I mean, it's through Tilly that we really get to see some of the more private moments of Burnham. It's through Tilly that we get the, I don't know, a lightness, I think, in the show itself. So I think she's a great part of the ensemble, and I'm hoping that we get to see more because they hinted at some threads that we still have need to pull, like her relationship with her parents and mm-hmm. things like that. So there's more to come.
Yeah, and Tilly is also kind of the audience surrogate a little bit. You know, she seems more like a regular person with faults and tics and social issues, but she is also a fictional Star Trek character because she rises to the challenge every time and is
like one of the smartest people on the show
and is extremely aspirational altogether. Yeah. And Mary Wiseman.
Yeah.
Does a great job.
So great.
All right. So what was that second part though?
Oh, the Culver?
Angela thinks that when Stamets was knocked out and went to the infirmary, went to sick bay in the season finale, of course, we saw Culver come to his aid mm-hmm. and they got back together. And Culber's going with the Discovery to the future. She thinks Culver was not there. It was an illusion in Stamets' head.
Wouldn't be the first time that happened.
I violently disagree with that.
Violently, wow. Yes.
Which means I'm gonna find Angela and punch her in the
face.
I'm gonna calmly turn to Mariah, who has seen the show now three times, mm-hmm. and say, "Did anything jump out at you that makes this a sixth sense?"
I think he's definitely there. Also, he's been confirmed for season three as a cast member. There you go. I think
Mariah to the rescue.
I think there would be huge revolt because they've built so much around that relationship to be there and be that point of representation. I think it would be detrimental to the character arc.
Not to mention they've done this to us already once, right? Like they've killed him once. And now they brought him back to kill.
Like, you're not going to go through all this work to bring him back just to put him off the show again.
Do we want to have the same story again? Let's search for Culber again so Stamets can be with him. We went through that already. Mm-hmm. And do the producers and writers of the show want to, you know, court that ire of the fan base that really loves these two characters and their journey? I don't think so.
Listen, I'm not afraid to write a nasty letter to CBS for Wilson Cruz.
As
either.
I know.
I'll do it.
As I know.
Also, this I feel like they know what they have with Wilson Cruz. If you've looked at his Instagram, you know that it is a beautiful, beautiful human that just should be around.
Agreed. Very much
those,
agreed.
Those thirst traps are there, and I have been trapped. And I fully know there's no opportunity.
It's not there for you.
No.
All right. Those are all of our voicemails for this time. Our voicemail line is still open, guys. So if you want to call us at 833-TREK-POD, it's 833-TREK-POD. I was trying to figure out the numbers because I didn't write them down.
Yeah, we're not going to look at the phone.
833-TREK-POD. TREKPOD. Go ahead and give us a call, and we'll probably have another one of these listener call-in shows down the line, and we would love to hear from you. Let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back with a fun game. And we're back. Grant, we're going to play the Grant game that Grant came up with and Grant made all the rules for.
Whoa, wait.
Tell us what to do, Grant.
Here's the thing. I say things. I just kind of throw out dumb ideas and then
people
get committed to them.
Mariah has notes.
Has notes for everything.
That's true. That's true.
Which is probably going to have to play into who you are as
it
a character.
Sure is.
Oh. Okay, so in our last episode, Grant came up with the idea of us coming up with our Star Trek Discovery characters. Who would we be if we were on Discovery, right? Who do we correlate with?
So let's start with you, fearless leader of our little Trek pod.
I was going to say let's start with you, but okay.
Nope.
Reluctant leader.
So we will start with Mike. And Mariah, since you have notes, who do you think Mike would be on this show?
Keep in mind my self-esteem is on the border here.
I said post-puberty Saru.
Oh. I'll take that.
Nice.
Why?
Well, I think it's because there is, you know, there's the leadership qualities. You try to keep us on track as much as we Jeremy bury me around the timeline all of the time with every episode. But you know, you have feelings and like deep history with the show, like he has with his planet and his like, I don't know. I was like, if I was to picture where Mike would want to live on the ship, it feels like Saru's room would feel like nice and homey.
Sure. I kind of wish I was as tall as him, too.
Nice. That's really good. I had some of the same thoughts, but I picked a different character.
All right. Who do you got, Clyde, for him?
I have an original Giorgio.
Oh, that is kind of a compliment. Thank
you.
Wow.
Well, yeah. I mean, Captain, again, tries to keep us on track. Thoughtful.
Dies easily.
Not dies easily. And I don't
think she die easily.
Though. And I don't think she died easily.
I've died so many times.
But it's one of those things where even when you're upset, you still support and have loyalty to your crew. So that's why I thought the original Giorgio.
Thank you, sir.
For my part, I thought that Mike is Linus. I think that you sneeze a lot and you're
very true.
You're a sassy bitch.
So. I'll take it. I guess with all these three, I'm a pretty well-rounded human being. I appreciate it.
So, all right, let's go to Mariah.
All right.
I guess Clyde would start now.
Yeah.
I've got one. So, I actually have two. So, I was thinking, Mariah, she has notes. She's thoughtful. She brings a intelligent quality to our team. And so I couldn't pick just one character. So I thought that Mariah was part Tilly, and not just because of her hair, but also Jet Reno.
Oh,
combination of those two.
I'm into that. I'm into that little Trek baby.
Yeah.
You cheated though, Clyde.
I know.
It's okay because I did the same thing for Clyde. I couldn't pick just one character. I have two.
I mean, it's inescapable why to compare you to Tilly.
You know, us curly hair gals got to stick together, so. Yeah.
But, you know, for similar reasons that I think you bring a certain level of expertise and well-researched opinion and thoughtfulness to this, I was toggling because I think there's a lot of different characters that kind of bring that element. But I think that you have a certain degree of focus that I was thinking more like Burnham.
Whoa.
Wow.
Nice.
I mean, I'm not seeing you like jumping out of spaceships and like,
I mean, you don't know what I do on my spare time.
You could.
I don't know.
Well, I think Mariah really brings a lot to this podcast, and she's someone we've done every episode of Star Trek Discovery, right? And Mariah has not been on every episode of that podcast, but on the episodes that she's on, those are some of my favorites. And I think Mariah, when I think about Mariah, I think about somebody who has her shit together and makes what we do better, even though she hasn't been with us from the beginning. So you remind me of our dearly departed Admiral Cornwell.
Is that a compliment?
I think that too.
I like Cornwell. It is if I like the
compliment. We both appreciate therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought everything you said is true, also of Jet Reno.
Yeah, but you already said Jet Reno.
I know.
But,
okay. Clyde, I'll go first.
Uh-oh.
You've written enough fan fiction about this character that I think no, but I think that you got your nerd bona fides, and you can be a little bit cantankerous about it on occasion. You're Stamets. Come on,
I'll take it.
I'm gonna make this short and say the same exact thing. Right when you came up with this game last week, I just instantly thought of Stamets for all the same reasons for Clyde.
I'll take it.
So I had you as the love child of Stamets and Reno because I think there's that like extra little sassy side every once in a while.
Every once in a while, yes. Especially if I haven't had coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the game. I guess we can wrap it up. We're done. So.
I guess I have to start talking about Grant. Huh? Mm-hmm. Who do I think Grant? I didn't come prepared for this, but, you know, thinking about it a little bit. There's a lot of really great characters to choose from.
Scrolling IMDb. This
cast is packed with so many talented people. Really,
just a lot of talent.
Deep.
Is there anyone who doesn't have talent? Can we get to that person?
Characters.
Where's the talentless one?
let's see. You know what? I'm going to go with Ash Tyler.
Son of a bitch.
I'm hated. And I deserve it.
No, I think Ash Tyler is has been the outsider from the beginning. And, you know, I guess we could say that about Grant because he didn't come in here with a love for Star Trek like the rest of us did. And he brings that element to the show, which is a little dangerous. Some might say like Ash Tyler, but he makes the show even better usually when he's there. A lot.
Usually. Let's just go ahead and underline usually.
Just like you did today. And, you know, plus you usually have some sexy facial hair going on. So
no one's ever said it's sexy. No, not once. My wife says actually quite the opposite. Get rid of that garbage on your face. But thank you.
Yes.
I'll take that.
Ash Tyler.
So I had written down a character that I think everyone roots for, and is sometimes thought of as the underdog, but usually ends up having good things to say. I put Tilly.
Nice.
I think that works. That works.
I went with someone who is not afraid to jump into the big chair when needed. And someone who, just is a nice presence. And this wasn't a major character, but I don't know. It just seemed like it would be the right character for it. I chose number one.
Oh.
Because I am a robot.
I am not a robot.
And I have no emotions. I never cry at anything.
That's very true.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yes. Very true. All right, guys. This has been a fun season with you. We'll be back for season three. Probably some fun episodes here and there for the off season. Anything else we want to mention before we wrap today?
Thank you guys for all of your support throughout this season. Thank you. I know so many people have joined us over on Patreon that like just found out about us this season, or maybe were a little hesitant before and finally jumped aboard. And all of you guys, all of your support, all of the phone calls that you guys have given us this episode means a lot. We appreciate all of you guys.
Yeah, and we will keep the Slack going for the most part during the off season. So let's talk Trek on Slack. And if you want to join that, just find us at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Guys, it's been a pleasure podcasting with you. Listener, it's been an absolute pleasure doing this show for you. And thank you so much for sending us your feedback. Live long and prosper.